is up, everybody, and welcome to the Tailgate. This is Tailgate Talks, episode number 226. We're recording on July 3rd. Today is a Wednesday. Want to wish you all a happy 4th of July. Hope that you have a fun and safe holiday. I know we will be enjoying ourselves. A day off for me. Dustin's already in kind of summer mode, so this is just another day.
Forgot my hat
for Dustin. Got his hat on. and again, for I think like this is like the fourth, fifth straight time you're repping Rangers gear. So
yeah, I didn't go with the jersey theme today, but went with the shirt. Yeah, got to keep it's you the, remembering.
It's the summer theme for Dustin. Yep. Is wearing that Rangers gear. But yeah, have a fun and happy 4th of July. We have a fun episode for you guys. We're living the three-stripe life here at Tailgate Talks, as much of Red Raider Nation is. Adidas is now officially the brand partner of Texas Tech. So we've got that to discuss. We've got jersey reveals to discuss. We've got college football 25 rankings to discuss. So we have a fun episode for you guys. And, of course, Season 2, Episode 3 of House of the Dragon was out on Sunday, so we're going to recap that at the end of the episode. If you're just here for the Dragon Talks recap, I have the timing in the information of the episode, so you can skip ahead to that if you want to just hear our thoughts on the newest House of the Dragon. But before we get to all that, we want to make sure that you are following the Tailgate, that you're following us on Apple, that you're following us on Spotify. Give us those five stars for the Tailgate. And if you listen to us on Apple, we always appreciate a review there. Also, follow us on social media. That's on Twitter at Tailgate_Talks. That's where we do most of our posting, interacting, get our thoughts on the jersey reveals, get our thoughts on some shirts not being available. You can follow us there. But we also have Facebook, Instagram, and a YouTube channel. And lastly, if you have anything you would like us to discuss on the Tailgate, comments, questions, sponsorships, whatever you want to discuss, you can send us an email at tailgatetalkspod@gmail.com. So with all of that said, let's go ahead and get into this week's episode.
Get your guns up, Red Raider Nation. Let's go.
Well, Dustin, July is officially here, and Texas Tech is officially an Adidas school in partnership with Patrick Mahomes. The reveal came on July 1st. We had a pretty cool campaign behind it with the tape getting ripped off and everything around that. It had been much anticipated since Patrick Mahomes announced that we would be becoming an Adidas school. I can't remember how long ago that was now, but so much anticipated. It is finally here. What are your thoughts now that Texas Tech is officially an Adidas school and the campaign that kind of surrounded it?
This had to be one of the coolest, like, switches or reveals ever, maybe. I don't know, or at least in a long time. Like, the whole video and campaign, and super good job by Tech and Athletics of giving us little sneak peeks but not revealing anything until like that Monday. And even Gio came out and said we were gonna do the football video later, but we got so much good publicity of like, where's the football uniforms? Though they just released it early, but it was such a good video and campaign. Like the first bit of little bit of Under Armour history and football history, and then using the tape for like the whole video reveal was genius and amazing and great graphics, like using it on the field with all the logos and like over like every jersey of like peeling it off. It was sick to like leaning into that by Adidas and Tech to go all in on the whole jersey or tape thing and make it part of the reveal, not just like, oh yeah, here's our new uniforms.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that shirt Mahomes wear at the Final Four ends up being like a whole campaign.
That's like the cornerstone of the whole thing.
You know, and they even copy the writing on the tape. You know, his little scribble Adidas on there just becomes the campaign for Texas Tech becoming an Adidas school. I loved the video. The helicopter removing the tape was really cool. I loved how every team, you know, posted that video of the day ripping off the tape and showing Adidas, You know, it's been incorporated in almost every uniform reveal. Of course, there's only been two jersey reveals so far with the Texas Tech football, Texas Tech soccer. I think, of course, the sports that are going to play sooner rather than later will get those reveals. Volleyball probably coming up soon. Yep. Before, like, you know, I don't know how long we'll have to wait to see basketball jerseys and baseball jerseys and all that stuff. But I definitely thought it was a really smart campaign. Of course, Texas Tech fans love it. But always looking, I love looking at the responses of other fans and other like media personalities and stuff. And this was like highly approved by just about everybody. Yes. Like that. So that's how you know it's a good job. Is other fans are like, wow, that's a really good campaign, really cool. Like you said, the logos on the field after the tape were so good that people legit thought those are actually part of.
Yeah, those are fake people
on the field now. not CGI'd on there. And so, really, really awesome ad campaign. Really cool day on July 1st to have just kind of all that incorporated merchandise and all that stuff up. And, of course, like you said, Gio mentioned it, the craze for wanting to see the Texas Tech football jerseys was all-time high. Everybody was waiting. Give us those jersey reveals. So they finally caved. Gave it to us that morning. What are your thoughts on the video specifically before we get into the jerseys? I thought it was a pretty epic reveal.
Yeah, of course our media team, athletic media team, crushed that. They've been doing great work for a long time now. And amazing reveal, amazing sneak peeks the weekend leading up to it of doing like little shoes and gloves, but nothing
reaction video of the like players seeing them for the first time was cool.
And to be able to not get any part of the uniforms in there is amazing, but capturing all that. But yeah, amazing video and reveal, and obviously using, I don't know, probably six of our best players. Duh, like pretty easy to do. So yeah, great job by our media team there.
Yeah, our media team always knocks these things out of the park. That's why I'm like, was so excited about all this. Is like all the jersey reveal videos are going to be sick. The soccer jersey reveal was pretty cool too. I really liked how it started. You know, part of the past, right?
Yep.
And when we get in the jerseys, you know, it starts off with, you know, some old school
Zach Thomas
jerseys.
In there,
you got
some
Zach
Mahomes.
Thomas. You got Mahomes in there, and then it's, you know, now into the jerseys and, you know, in the stadium.
They got
the
new
lights
flashing.
They got those flashing, and then you finally get the full reveal with all the players standing there in all the jersey combinations. And so let's get to it, Dustin. Your thoughts on those jerseys the first time you saw them, man?
Oh, those are sick. And my favorite thing is the lettering is big. I mean, not like Oregon type big,
not gigantic,
stupid,
right.
But it's big. It's not TCU using the smallest font ever. In some of this minimalist jersey stuff that's been going on for the last 10, 15 years. It's big. It's legible. It's really great. And the combos I know we're going to get into are amazing. But yeah, like that's probably my favorite part is the big and boldness of letters and numbers.
Yeah, I love these jerseys. I think they're super slick. They each one of them is really cool. You kind of pointed out on our Twitter, the red jerseys have red Raiders. I like that kind of difference that you're going with the red Raiders for the red jerseys. It seems like that might be a theme, so I'll be interested to watch that as other jerseys come out. But we've seen that in football and now in soccer, the red jerseys both have that. The black jerseys are sick. The white jerseys are sick. The helmets are perfection in my standpoint. I know everybody wants to bigger about, oh, it's not the old school logo. I think it's great. I think it's a great, these jerseys are a great combination of eras. Social media team did a great job of pointing out kind of what parts of the jersey represent different eras. You got the stripes that represent an era. You got the Texas Tech lettering that you mentioned. Representing a certain era.
Yeah, I have it in front of me.
Stripes
are the Zach Thomas era jerseys. The jerseys look super similar to that era as well. The helmets, you mentioned like the helmet don't have they have the new double T, but the stripe is old school Billy Joel Tolliver time. The jerseys are like the netting type jerseys. Like that's how a throwback that is. And then the numbers and lettering are like the Crabtree Herald type days, big, kind of has the same look to it. So yeah, like mixing some of our past all together and mixing it really well.
Yeah, it's a really cool concept. I'm really, you know, everybody gets pretty nervous about these jersey reveals because this is what you're going to be kind of stuck with over the next few years. You want it to be something sick. And it's been a much approved jersey from not only Texas Tech fans, but another thing was, you know, the sports world was all in favor of these jerseys too. Lots of people complimenting these jerseys, from hated rivals to new Big 12 member foes to Oklahoma State and all that stuff like that. A lot of people out there really like these jerseys, especially this year where a lot of jersey reveals have been pretty like, ugh, those aren't really good. It's kind of nice to have some fire jerseys now and get the reaction that we got from not only Texas Tech fans but the country in these. So that's really cool. So let's go ahead and rank them.
Okay.
I know this is kind of the discussion. I've seen a lot of people on Twitter kind of talking about it, but you've got the all reds, the all blacks, and the all whites. We'll start off there. Rank them. Let's start off the lowest and go to the highest. What's your order?
We're doing the alls together.
Yeah, just the all red, all black, all white.
Oh, way to go alls together. I think the white are the sickest. Like,
yeah,
with the white helmet, the jerseys have black lettering and numbers, but a very good red outline that makes it pop somehow and differently.
Yeah.
And it's like really clean, really nice, like one color uniform there. But yeah, that red outline makes it pop awesome.
Yeah, my third favorite is probably the all reds. I've never been like a huge fan of just the all red jersey. I like the red tops. I like red pants, but just for some reason altogether, I'm not the biggest fan of it. I still like it.
It gives big day game vibes.
Yeah, like that 11 a.m. kickoff kind of vibes.
I don't know why I think of Tyler Shuck going to see all red uniforms.
Yeah. I think of that too.
Yeah, I agree.
Then I got to go
all red last.
Number two, I got to go the blacks, all blacks. But they're pretty close
pretty
to the
good.
All whites. All whites are sick. I love the all whites. It's really nice and clean. The all black is really nice and clean too. I think those are awesome jerseys. I love the all black look. Like, I love those Crabtree years where you wore the all black. So, and I don't think we've had a really solid all black since really those jerseys. This one's right up there for me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those all whites are phenomenal. I love the look, the black with the red lining, you said the white helmet on top too. Really like that. One of the other cool parts of the reveal was they did they had six players, so you have one player wearing the all white, one all black, one all red, but then they had some other combinations in the video. We got Baron Morton wearing a white helmet, black jersey, white pants. We have Taj wearing black helmet, red jersey, black pants, and then we had Jacob Rodriguez wearing black on white on black. So out of those combinations, out of other possible creations, what do you like here about some of the other options that we can use?
Oh, this is an easy one out of all six. Honestly, it's the red jerseys with the black helmet, black pants that Taj has. Like,
yeah,
the red jerseys are my favorite by themselves because of the bold red Raiders. I don't know, just really pops. But yeah, and having it with the black on the top and bottom, like, those are sick. Those are my 1-1 for sure. And then the white, black, white that Baron's in after that. Black, white, black doesn't pop as good to me. But yeah, by far, the black, red, black with the red jersey, red Raider jerseys, that's my favorite of all of them anyways.
I think my favorite is still the all whites. I do like the white, black, white. I like the black, white, black look.
It's okay.
I really like the black, red, black. I've always liked the red jersey with the black pants look. I think that's a sick, clean looking jersey. It's great for a home game. I love that jersey combination. I'd be curious to see kind of other combinations like a white, red, white, or some of the combinations that you can do with white on red or whatever. Doesn't look like there's a red helmet this year. I know we've had some in the past, but I'm okay with that. I like the white and the black helmets. And then there's rumors that there's a fourth jersey, and I do not know when that will be revealed. There's there's been some
discussion
about it. On the store, you could see that there's like, I think there was a gray option. So I don't know. It sounds like there might be a gray jersey option, which
boo,
not a huge fan.
Nah,
of, but
we don't want gray.
But overall, really positive feedback on these jerseys. Doesn't anyone want to get your thoughts tonight before July 1st, about 11 p.m., Red Raider Outfitter caught slipping, leaked all the jerseys on their website for sale, along with a bunch of Adidas gear that you could get. And, of course, Twitter users took that and decided, you know what, Texas Tech is trying to keep this on lock. Let me screenshot these and post them on Twitter. Really good job by you guys. So I want to say it's not just Red Raider Outfitter that's at fault. It's the people who saw it and immediately had to go like, I got to go to social media with this. I just thought it was – I felt real bad for the media team and Texas Tech, who've been doing such a great job at keeping this stuff under wraps, on lock, and then Red Raider Outfitter like an hour before accidentally leaks it, and that just has to suck. And then all the people on Twitter who had to go and post those photos. Just I don't know. What were your thoughts on that? I think you were already asleep, so you might have missed all of that. But
I did miss it. I did see some after, you know, effects of it the next morning. But yeah, how do you jump the gun like that and leapfrog the Adidas team and the Texas Tech team and get out there ahead of time? Why are you not an hour behind this, especially when it's like a midnight deal or whatever it was? No one's really buying that from you at that time, at least.
No.
They're going to go the next day maybe, but you don't need to be that antsy to get on there and get it out, Red Raider Outfitter.
Yeah, I thought it was a really bad job by them. Obviously, somebody got in trouble. The jerseys got taken down. People were asked to remove those tweets. I just like, I always hate that shit. You know, like, oh, I got to go to the social media. I think that's a bad look for anybody who posted that stuff. I think it's a bad look for Red Raider Outfitter. You got to be, I don't even know why you would have had them set for sale at midnight anyway. No. Like, they weren't going to do the reveal at midnight. Like, I know a lot of people stayed up till midnight because they thought something was going to happen, but like, they're going to wait till the next day to do that stuff anyway. I don't know why they didn't have their jerseys like, all right, whenever Texas Tech does the official reveal, then we will be able to put those for sale. I don't know why that wasn't communicated. I wonder what happened there, but obviously a big mistake there. And yeah, they were the jerseys. So it kind of did ruin a little bit of the reveal for me because I had was on Twitter and I saw the posts and I was like, well, shit. So now I have that spoiled, which I would have preferred to have it done in the reveal video.
Yeah.
But oh well, still nonetheless was a really cool reveal video, really cool jerseys. Enjoyed all of July 1st and all of that transition. Let's get to the gear side of things. Highly disappointed at Adidas, I will say, for this, because there's two shirts that I freaking love that I've seen. Of course, it's the Texas Tech Patrick Mahomes Adidas tape shirt. And then they posted like a little photo shoot that Patrick Mahomes had done in some gear. There's a sick Tech shirt with his logo on it. And both of those shirts are not for sale. I have no idea how the tape shirt is not ready to go day one. That how you've had plenty of time to have those. And that would have been money in the pocket.
They should have got that out early.
That should have been way.
That should have been like 2 weeks ago just to get stuff rolling and hype people up.
Yeah. A huge missed opportunity there by them. And then, you know, I'm not so mad about the shirt that Mahomes was wearing in the photo shoot because, you know, we had all just seen that day one and I'm like, oh, that's a really cool shirt. And then I go to Adidas, I go to Red Raider Outfitter, I go to everywhere and I don't see it available. I just don't understand how you can make like the two cool shirts that you give Mahomes and then just not give them to anybody else. Like, you know that anybody who sees those shirts is going to want to go buy it and then it's not available. I'm sure they will become available at some point. Just highly frustrating that it's not available at day one, because that's what I was saving like some money for. I was like, I'm going to buy that tape shirt and then I'm going to see if I can buy any like cool gear that might have Mahomes logo on it or something, and nothing. So, pretty disappointed by them on that side of things.
Yeah. Those are by far the two best shirts. Nowhere in getting to like does anything else look good? But those are by far the two best options, and they're not an option. Oh, yeah. That sucks. And especially like the Tech Mahomes shirt, like in the photo shoot, like you just made one of those for him? Come on.
Yeah.
Like,
why? I don't understand the reasoning behind that. Like,
surely they've heard all the fuss, you know, from you and a million other Tech fans of why this isn't available. Yeah. So I'm sure they'll be coming out soon.
Yeah, I really hope, because I mean, everybody wants that shirt. Like, you know, that's probably like our most liked tweet ever. When I just tweeted out, how are these shirts not available on day one? And everybody was like, yes. So that's just money in the bank for Adidas if they have.
Yeah, you got almost 400 likes on that one.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm a little, you know, I knew the gear coming right out the gate wasn't going to be fantastic. I knew it was going to be kind of limited, pretty basic gear at the start. Just some stuff to get out there for people. So, you know, I'm not overly thrilled by things I saw. There's some shirts, there's some jackets, some hoodies and stuff that I've seen that I'm like, okay, yeah, that's cool. But the two main things that I want, not available. That's a little disappointing, but I guess I'll just wait, have those available. Meanwhile, Under Armour sales going on left and right. So, you know, we say goodbye to Under Armour, but hello clearance sales. So that's decent. Any other things Adidas related right here that you want to talk about?
Yeah, you kind of mentioned it, like when you do go to their website, one is really cool that the main Adidas website had Tech all over the front page of it that Monday when they revealed this. So Adidas being super all in was really cool. I did see some screenshots that we crashed the site for a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's also great.
We were also trending in like fashion.
Yeah. But yeah, the gear is super basic. Nothing like, whoa, I need that, or whoa, that's amazing and awesome. Like, only when I'm like, hey, that's cool, is the Adidas Tech Mahomes across the chest logos. That's really about it that stands out to me a little bit.
Yeah, kind of same here, but I feel like that's still.
But like, you don't have sports specific stuff, so you don't have football game day gear and basketball gear and all that yet. So,
yeah, it'll be a little bit slower. You know, I know everybody wants like the awesome gear right away, but it takes time, you know, and they did their best to have some stuff for us at the start because they knew fans would be wanting to get some gear, but I'm sure some of the better stuff will come out later on. Hopefully those t-shirts become available. That way people can get those. And so, yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. But overall, it's been really fun and more fun to be had with the Adidas as more jersey reveals, more things come out as, you know, other sports are still, we're still waiting to see, what kind of gear they'll be wearing for their upcoming seasons. But, along with, this summer times and football season slowly approaching, you now have the Big 12 media polls that came out yesterday. Yeah. Texas Tech projected to finish ninth in the Big 12 media poll that came out. Dustin, we're big anti preseason poll fans here. We understand the necessity for it. We understand the discourse around it, but we're always frustrated with people getting upset about it. What are your thoughts on Texas Tech being projected to finish ninth in the Big 12's preseason media poll?
Seems pretty accurate, honestly. I mean, you said for a while we need to prove a lot of things, and I think that's what a lot of the media people are saying. And I don't know. Look, I think we are appropriately ranked for being a month or two out from the season.
It doesn't hurt my feelings. I look at all the teams in front of us, and I think, like, who are you really replacing us with? Maybe UCF, maybe West Virginia, but, you know, Utah, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Kansas, Arizona, all those teams belong, I think, in the top five. Iowa State was pretty good last year. You only expect them to get better because they were so young. You know, West Virginia had a really solid season last year. How do they get better? UCF was a team that was kind of on the same level as you are last year. I look at the teams that you're behind, and I agree with those. So, ninth seems right. I obviously hope we don't finish ninth, but you haven't proved anything yet. And so this is my thing to all the fans. It's like, hey, we haven't won again. I don't know how many times I've said this. We haven't won 8 games in a regular season since 2008.
Nope.
And so we got to prove that we can do it before we're going to get any respect. And so, you know, that's where my head's at. We haven't proven anything so far. So go out there, prove them wrong, go win some games and see where you can end up. Hopefully we do end up higher than that 9th place projected finish, but that's kind of where you're at as a program right now.
Do we want to talk about the rest of the list, though, and teams? I kind of do.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, what? I mean, there's only one team that really stands out to me there, and it's a team that we'll talk about a little bit more here later on. But
okay, yeah, Colorado, we'll save that one. Yeah. I mean, the only team I'm like, ah, come on, right out the gates is Kansas being fourth. And with 5 first place votes. Yeah. Here's my deal there. If you're going to knock us for being not a not prove it team and injured a lot, you got to do the same for Kansas, because sure, they have this great running back and quarterback allegedly, but they're always hurt and playing half a year, not even like 8-9 games, like 6-5.
And barely makes it through the non-conference.
So it's like, don't even give them first place votes. You know, top 4 is stretching it also.
If I really had a, I think Arizona should definitely be higher than Kansas on that poll. Arizona went out, had a really good season last year. Obviously new coach and stuff, but they kept their quarterback, best receiver. They're going to have a really good team. I don't understand how Kansas, you know, we beat Kansas last year. Of course, you know, Jalen Daniels was hurt, but
of course he was,
you know, of course he was. We were on our second string quarterback too.
But
so,
I kind of like, if you look at the votes, how it falls, it seems pretty good. Like there's definitely like a top 3 tier with Utah, Kansas State, Oklahoma State. They're bringing all a ton of stuff back and have proven it a lot. And like Kansas, Arizona, Iowa State, kind of that next tier. Maybe they're good. Maybe they're not as good as we think. And there's like us, UCF, and West Virginia, kind of that middle. Mm-hmm. Are they going to go up or down type tier? And it kind of just falls off from there with some very mediocre subpar teams and the really bad teams in Cincy, Houston, Arizona State.
Yeah,
hopefully the bottom and Baylor down there, like it really falls off a cliff after that. But I think like the top half or so, those top like 3 tiers, pretty accurate.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like the top 3 are all interchangeable. If Utah, Kansas State, Oklahoma State win the conference this year, I'm not going to be shocked. Nah. You know, Arizona, Kansas, Iowa State. Yeah, great second tier. And then same with our kind of tier. I would even throw TCU into our tier there a little bit. Just like I feel like all those could be interchangeable. If you had to project it now, or do you think we end up end all be all?
It's hard just going off of this with no like wins or loss records beside it. You know?
Right.
I don't know what 9 wins gets us.
Yeah.
On that,
I don't know,
at 8. Are we a 6-6, 7-5 team? I don't know. I would think it's a little higher. That's just a little bit of hope. Probably in that 4-5 range.
Yeah, I would say 4-5 range is a success. Because I would think mm-hmm. that means you probably have 8 wins on the season. I think that 6-7-8 range could be good. Just to, you know, these seasons are crazy. There's a lot of teams in this conference too, and you're not playing a lot of teams in this conference, and so it's just kind of going to be weird how this conference shakes up, and ending up 6th or 7th with a good record might not be that bad of a thing,
right?
Even ending up 9th might not be terrible, because you know, who knows how this is all going to shake up. It could be just a mess where, you know, nobody separates themselves from the crowd in the conference, and it's just all teams with similar records, or, you know, so yeah, we'll dive into that stuff more once we like actually do our, you know, go through the schedules, do our predictions and stuff like that. We'll probably have a better look at where we're going to finish, but I know our schedule sets up well for us to come out there and give it a run. So we'll see what happens. Some other preseason, nominations. You got Taj Brooks, a preseason first team All-American running back. Not a shocker to anybody here. And then you got Dre McCray, preseason first team All-American kick returner. So you got two first teamers. Pretty nice. You didn't have anybody make second team, but any thoughts on that?
Kind of to piggyback on what you say with the teams, like there's just a lot of teams to pick people from for only a first team in this Big 12 preseason deal. So you're not going to get a lot. I know Oklahoma State got quite a bit. I think they have five on this list. Obviously, Ollie Gordon, shout out getting a DWI last week.
Yeah.
But Taj getting his respect, that's really cool. I wouldn't expect anybody else, honestly. A lot of O-linemen coming back for other teams that are more successful. Mm-hmm. We just switched our whole receiving core, you know. In defense, we lost a lot and shook up. So nothing surprising there. I'm glad Dre also got his. He had the best, you know, kick return average last year in the Big 12. So good for him being on there. I hope he can produce that as well, though.
Yeah, I hope he can do that. I hope we can utilize him more as a receiver as well this year. But yeah, Taj Brooks getting the nom, just always cool for him. One of my favorite players, especially in the last, you know, decade or so of football to watch. And so been really fun to watch him. Nice to see him get those honors. Yes. And hopefully he can go out and kind of recreate what he did for you last season, maybe even better. So excited for him. And yeah, it's always just cool to get a nomination. So I'm sure that's really cool for Dre McCray. And hopefully by the end of the season, you might have some other names on that list. Like you said, you don't really have anybody that's really worth putting up there, I think, right now. And of course, this conference, 16 teams, a lot of players to choose from now. So that, yeah, it's going to be hard to make a first, second, third team conference. So we'll be interested to see what players kind of rise, what players kind of fall. Also, as of July 1, officially have gotten rid of Texas and Oklahoma. They are officially now off to the SEC. Can say goodbye to those two schools. Say goodbye to the Longhorn Network. Thank goodness. No longer have to deal with these two teams in our conference. And we welcome in Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah to the Big 12. Anything you want to say there? You just want to get on to college football rankings that came out.
They moved at the same time we did our jersey reveal, and all I saw was Tech went to Adidas. I didn't see much about the move to the SEC from those other guys. So,
I'm kind of glad that our jersey reveal was the takeover of the day.
Yep.
So, you know, it's exciting for the Big 12 to have these new schools and to have this 16-team conference, and definitely looking forward to what this season and all the chaos kind of brings. Also, we wanted to mention college football 25 rankings came out, last week. They, you know, we're getting closer and closer to the release of the game. So they've been giving us some little tidbits here or there. They released their top 25 offenses, their top 25 defenses, from, in the game, and then their top 25 teams overall. Not going to go very detailed into this, but just wanted to talk about the 11th place team in the Big 12 preseason polls. And they obviously have a pretty good PR team, or they gave EA Sports a little extra money, or something happened here, because Colorado is like one of the top offenses in the country. They are the 8th overall offense in the country. They are they were like the 20th best defense in the country.
There's stats on that too that are shady.
Yeah. And they're the 16th overall team in the game. So Dustin, any thoughts on the college football 25 at Colorado getting all this crazy pub here?
Yeah, 16th overall at 87, 1 point behind Utah, who's number one in the Big 12 at 88 and 10th on this list. And over all those other schools, but they're ranked preseason 11th in conference. I don't understand. I think my big point is, I get that you have Shador Sanders. He's a good quarterback. I don't know how really good he is. And Travis Hunter, who's really good receiver and corner, probably one of the best corners in the country. But that's about it. Like,
that's it.
Just because you have two/three, I guess you could count Travis Hunter as two players, really good players, that doesn't make your whole team really good.
Yeah,
especially with how much transfer portal they've done in the last 2 years and scrapped their team. You don't know how good some of these other guys are that they're bringing in as much as a lot of these other teams. And so it's kind of stupid to have them ranked so, so high.
Yeah, I think that's really silly. I mean, they were 4-8 last year. They weren't any good. The teams that they beat weren't any good. You know, we were like, unbelievable. They beat Colorado State in
four overtime.
Triple overtime. Yeah. A team they were 3 touchdown point favorites on. Just obviously not a really good team last year. Obviously not going to be that amazing of a team this year. I don't think, you know, who knows? Maybe they figure it out this season, but definitely it was not a team that should warrant anything being anywhere near the top 25. Offensively, I get it. Like, you know, they had a decent offense. I could get them being in the top 25 of that. But being a top 20 defense is just absolutely absurd.
Here's their defensive stats. I found them. So they ranked 20th in the game. Last year, they were the 110th in total defense, 96th in rushing, 102 in passing, and 6th worst in power 5 versus expected metrics. So even
not good
from the computer, they're playing worse than that. It's like, how are they what's their defense rank? 20th or the 84 overall, better than Oklahoma State's.
Yeah, that's absurd. Absolutely absurd. I got to wonder how they got up there. Makes no sense to me. You know, the other gripe I've seen is, you know, Missouri not even being one of the top 25 teams after last year having a great season, mm-hmm. and returning a bunch of players on that team, not making the top 25. Clemson being like the number 6 best team in the game when they've, kind of fallen down a tick over the last bit. Ole Miss being 15th. I think they're supposed to be really damn good this year. And so definitely some interesting things from that. It's much different than a preseason poll because this is how good that they think they're actually going to be. Like, they're giving them this rating and thinking Colorado is going to be one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, it made me think either what does EA Sports know or what do they not know? Like, do they know absolutely nothing?
Do they pay attention to college football at all?
Like, it's either one extreme or the other. Like, do they know something we don't with some of these guys they got, or do they absolutely not know anything?
Yeah, because last year it all went to shit and went to shit really fast. They started off 3-0 and then won one game the rest of the way. So, nothing they did last year, I think, warrants that. I did see some Texas Tech fans getting mad that Tech wasn't in a top 25
for
offense
why?
Or defense. I don't know. I wanted to reply, but I was like, I'm just going to leave it. But
yeah, we don't deserve that. I mean, Baron Morton's been hurt. Taj is really good. He'll be our best player for sure.
We redid
like half the O-line. We redid the whole receiving core.
Your offense sucked last year?
Your offense
really,
wasn't great last year.
It's like we forgot that we won games like 13-10 and 24-23, and we never scored over 50 points last year. Remember? No 50 burgers.
No.
We're nowhere near a good offense yet. You know, hopefully, you know, we're a good offense this year. Hopefully things improve. But so far, if you're going off last season, there's no way we should be a top 25 offense. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, defense, we were a much better defense. I don't think we're top 25 defense, though. So, but I saw that and I was like, what are people smoking? I think I just wanted to see that we're in the game. And so now you can officially know that we're in the game because yesterday there was a dynasty mode reveal that they did and Texas Tech was in the college football playoff. So,
okay.
I don't know how. Yeah. That'll get them going. So, but there is proof now that Texas Tech is officially in the game. I think a lot of people are like, are we even in this game? But, you know, we obviously know why that was happening. I did forget about this topic and wanted to mention it before we move on to our final shots. Texas Tech's Big 12 opponents for next basketball for this upcoming basketball season were announced for the 2024 upcoming season. They Big 12 announced the matrix for the upcoming season, and so I'm trying to find,
and I just had it too. I gotta scroll back for it. But now we're on the 20-game schedule with 16 teams. So they kind of just flipped what we did last year, but added some of the new teams in there. I like that. It looks like they made it easy on themselves. Here, I got it for us. Oh, that's just like the – so, like, Houston's both. Oklahoma State is both. TCU is both. Arizona State is both. Mm-hmm. Your home onlys are Colorado, Iowa State, Baylor, just one time, UCF, mm-hmm. and West Virginia. And then away only, pretty tough away, I think, only schedule. Kansas State and Kansas, Cincinnati, Utah, and BYU. So –
yeah, I think that's a pretty tough road slate there. Obviously, we haven't played well at Kansas State ever. Kansas is obviously always a very difficult place to play. We've never been up to Cincinnati, but they're going to have a pretty good squad, right. It looks like, this year. Utah might be the easiest of those. Not really sure what they're going to look like in Big 12. And then we obviously know BYU was pretty good last year. We'll see what they look like with their new coach, but they've got a pretty good home environment. So that's going to be tough. What do you think about the two-way matchups, the home and home? So at Arizona State, you get Houston two times, Oklahoma State and TCU. What do you think about, like, Baylor not being one of those teams?
Well, we're not doing, like, protected matchup, whatever type stuff. Like football did kind of last year. Like I said, they kind of just flipped a lot of things and added the new teams in. So you had some of that last year as well. I'm okay with it. I mean, you only played Houston once last year down there. Kind of flipping the Houston-Baylor back-to-back deal. Now, the Arizona both times and Houston both times, that's going to suck.
That's tough. Yeah.
That's two.
We got a pretty tough draw there.
That's two top five teams to have to play four times. And that's just rough. Now, the other three, that's six fairly easy games that you should be favored in, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, TCU is obviously one of those places you don't play very well in Fort Worth. So, you know, I figure you can maybe just pencil that in as you're going to go split that one. I'm glad Baylor wasn't in there, because then you'd have three, like, just, I mean, that'd be six just brutal games. So I'm glad you only get Baylor once. I'm glad you get one of those teams once. I really do like your home schedule here, though. You're going to have Arizona, Houston, Iowa State, Baylor, TCU, like, all of those as home games is great for us as season
not
ticket
having
players.
To play at Baylor means we don't have to watch that terrible camera angle.
That too.
Let's go.
That too. We will have to watch Oklahoma State's camera angle.
They fixed it last year.
You know, that's right.
They gave it to Baylor.
They gave it to Baylor. But yeah, I do like that you're going to have, you know, right now, potentially four top 10 teams come to the USA this year. If, you know, Arizona, Iowa State, Baylor, and Houston, if all that holds up.
I know some of these aren't bad, but, like, not having to make the West Virginia or UCF trip is a plus. Like, those are long trips.
Yeah, Utah, I feel like Utah and BYU kind of take the place of that, I guess.
I feel like it's not as bad.
It's not as bad. Yeah, it shouldn't be as bad. You just got to do it twice. Hopefully they're not like – hopefully it's like a Saturday – Tuesday night where you can just go and just stay there and play back to back and then come back. I don't know. So 20 conference games. So we go up two games. We obviously know the Big 12 conference is a great basketball conference, even more firepower added to the conference with the likes of Arizona. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be tough. Going to be a slog, but I totally forgot about that. So I wanted us to go ahead and mention that before we move on to our final shots, and then we'll go ahead and get into Dragon Talks. But let's do that right quick. As we've gotten through all of our Texas Tech news this week, Dustin, let's head over to final shot for this week's sports related.
Yeah, I'm taking my USA cowboy hat off for this one because Team USA soccer sucks again. They don't deserve for me to root for them and wear a hat for them. They lost in the Copa Americas tournament in the group stage. Couldn't even get out of the group stage. Played a big home game in Kansas City on Monday night, I believe, and needed to win against Bolivia. Is that right? No, Uruguay.
Uruguay, we needed Bolivia to win.
And absolutely sucked from what I was watching. Uruguay just manhandled us from what it looked like. Now, the ref in that game, was super over his head and really, really sucked ass.
He was bad.
He was bad.
I've never seen a yellow card be given and play on at the same time.
Oh, yeah, that's the biggest F up ever. That's like trying to Hollywood Higgins trying to give a tech and then letting Kansas alley run us at the same time. Like, yeah, that was horrible, but I don't think it was all the refs' fault. Like, we played really terrible. And then, like, the coach needs to be fired. I get they're like, oh, well, it's too late to do that. It's never too late. They need to get one of, like, the A&M boosters that loves switching coaches to, or one of the UT boosters to pay them off.
They get the UT guys. They can sell any coach, apparently.
Yeah,
so,
but yeah, USA Soccer sucks again.
Yeah, pretty brutal to not make it, especially when his home field, like, for all of this, you know, and the losing to Panama was pretty embarrassing. Shouldn't have done that. Horrible penalty that that came back to bite you. And then, yeah, you just never really had opportunity to score. And then we had an opportunity to score, we completely botched it. And so,
oh, my God, yeah, the goalie's hanging out outside the goalie box, and you couldn't even get a shot on goal.
Yeah, pretty frustrating to watch. So hopefully some changes coming as the World Cup is 2 years away and you are a host. So luckily you're going to be in it, but you want to be able to put up some sort of a fight. And it doesn't seem like Berhalter is the guy to do so. So that was a frustrating watch. But also what has come with us this week is NBA free agency is officially here. It's one of my favorite times of the NBA calendar. I love seeing where new faces go, players end up. And really, so far, big changes. You got Paul George is now a Philadelphia 76er. Klay Thompson is no longer part of the Golden State Warriors organization. He is now a Dallas Mav, joining Luka and Kyrie as a Maverick. So that's a pretty big get for Dallas Mavericks. You got Chris Paul, who is now headed to San Antonio to work with Victor Wembanyama. You've got all sorts of moves happening throughout the league. LeBron re-signed with the Lakers, of course, for the max. So interesting there. I think he was talking about taking a pay cut to help get talent. I think he meant Clay. So they didn't get Clay. So he's like, oh, give me that money. Have no fear. They got Bronny. They got Bronny, though. So any other free agent moves that have piqued your curiosity? I know it's a lot of like kind of smaller players going places. But
The Thunder got Hardenstein from the Knicks. He'll be a really good center for them to like help Chet move and play defense for that young squad. And
a big, more physical interior defender that they were kind of missing last year.
And like that just made them way bigger because now like Chet can play the four, Jalen Williams can play the three, and he's huge. So like to add some defense and rebounding to like SGA and Jalen and Chet is huge for that young team. Chris Paul, I mean, I get the move for Wimby and teach him a lot. I basically just see this. They're paying a lot for a coach.
Yeah, but they also need a point guard there. They didn't have a point guard last year, and they need somebody who can get him the ball. And so that'll be a big help. And that'll make Chris Paul's life easier at this age in his career.
Yeah, doesn't have to worry about making the finals and whatnot and pulling a hamstring.
That'll kind of help.
I like the move the Mavericks made with Clay. He'll be a really good catch and shoot guy for them when they already have two main sources of offense. So like, that's kind of where Clay is in his career. He doesn't need to be the number two guy anymore. Bump him down to three, sit him in the corner to drain threes as he's the best guy to ever catch and shoot threes. So great addition there. The Lakers really lost out on that and are basically just going to run back the same team because they don't have money to do anything else. So, good luck, JJ.
Yeah, they don't have money. They're not going to really do much. Seems like they're going to miss out on everybody that they were interested in. And so, yeah, yay, run it back, play-in team that got knocked out in round one. The Nuggets are interesting. They lost Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to Orlando. Not really sure what they're doing. I'm not sure why they aren't trying to reload and try to take advantage of having the best player in basketball on your team.
Stan Kroenke, the owner, doesn't want to pay the luxury tax, which is kind of stupid when you have the best player in the league and another good all-star in Jamal Murray that plays at a high level. Like, you should be capitalizing on this window, not letting dudes go. And that was your strength, was you have a really good depth top end roster. And KCP was one of those guys.
Yeah. You lost that piece. Now you got
to lost Bruce Brown like 2 years ago. Now KCP, they're not adding pieces. Hope
those younger guys that they drafted become really good players for them. So yeah, NBA free agency is always fun. Always fun to see new guys on new teams, see what teams do, how they build. Really like the Mavs, what they did here, getting Clay to add in. And it's, life's going to be made easy for him yet again, having Luka and Kyrie just out there. And then all he's got to do is catch and shoot.
Yep.
Maybe create his own shot from time to time, but do that. See if he can become a good defender again, back to like kind of what he was back on Golden State before the injuries. But we'll definitely be interested to see where other players fall, how the rest of the offseason shakes out for the NBA as we head towards a new season. Anything else, final shot for us wise? Head on over to the Dragon Talks.
I'm good, man.
All right, well, that will do it for us. In the sports world this week, we're going to head over to Westeros and now discuss Season 2, Episode 3 of House of the Dragon.
There is no war so hateful to the gods as a war between kin, and no war so bloody as a war between dragons.
All right, Dustin. Well, we are back in Westeros for Season 2, Episode 3, The Burning Mill. Let's start off with the episode recap. The episode starts off in the Riverlands where the Brackens and the Blackwells are. They're having a little dispute over where the land is, which one's Bracken's land, which is Blackwood's land. And this little dispute turns over to a realization that one side has sided for King Aegon. One side has sided for Queen Rhaenyra. These two families have gone back hating each other for hundreds and hundreds of years. And this little fight between, you know, four guys on each side ends up turning into a huge, gigantic battle. We don't get to watch the battle, but we see the bodies of all of those that had fallen at the Battle of the Burning Mill. And it is quite a loss for both sides, to where even on both sides are like, I don't really think this is a win. These are two big houses in the Riverlands that just kind of decimated each other and really starts the war that has kind of been teetering. And, you know, it's been axe here, axe there, haven't been any battles. Well, now we have one huge battle at the Burning of the Mill. On Team Black, back on Dragonstone, the Cargill twins are buried. Of course, they died at the end of Episode 2. Rhaenyra is kind of growing eager to act, but Rhaenys provides some unexpected advice and an unexpected ally in Queen Alicent Hightower. Lady Missaria is now fully committed to Team Black after saving Queen Rhaenyra's life after the close call. Rhaenyra is trying to protect her family, so she sends Rhaena, the youngest daughter of Daemon, to take care of her youngest boys and some dragon eggs. Dustin, do you believe those might be the eggs of future Queen Daenerys Targaryen?
I've seen conflicting reports on that. I've seen some that see the coloring and compare them, and they're like, yeah, it looks like it definitely is. The showrunner said it was. I don't know how much they can really say. And then some people actually looked at the dragons and they don't look like the descendants of the same dragons. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I'm not worried about it either.
I'm not worried about it either, but I would find it interesting if those become, because she's sending her boys and Rhaena and these dragon eggs off to Pentos to where they can be safe from the war, as you know, little boys are being slaughtered in their beds, so she's trying to protect their family. I think that would be very interesting. But she sends those off to war. Meanwhile, Daemon has flown off to capture Harrenhal for Team Black. He is indeed still fighting for Team Black, although he's doing it on his own. But I think the better question here is, will Harrenhal take Daemon, as the haunting halls of Harrenhal for some kind of creepy visions in Daemon, and a creepy lady comes up and says, "You will die here." Not words that you really want to hear. Meanwhile, back on Dragonstone, Rhaenyra's council urges to go to war and bring the dragons in with her, while she attempts to do her best to stop the war by throwing one final Hail Mary, seeing Queen Alicent Hightower. On Team Greenside, Sir Criston Cole gets ready for day one as Hand of the King and hatches a plan to go to Harrenhal as well, but let's do so undetected, bringing no dragons, and see if we can turn Team Black allies into Team Green allies. Enter Gawain Hightower, the brother of Alicent Hightower. Didn't know this guy existed. He comes in out of nowhere, and he's going to accommodate Kristen new haircut Cole to Harrenhal. Aegon wants to go, but he is advised to stay by Laris Clubfoot Strong, who convinces him to stay here at the castle, thus earning Laris Strong the role of Master of Whisperers. He's called off the bench into the starting lineup here in this episode. Even though he's got a club foot, he's proved pretty valuable for Aegon so far. Aegon goes back to his fuckboy ways after this by taking his newly appointed Kingsguard, a.k.a. his bros, out for a night of partying that causes him to stumble upon Aemond, who is with his cougar lady, his lady at the brothel that he was in with episode 2, episode 3. Aegon proceeds to be a gigantic asshole here, but Aemon takes the high road. Meanwhile, Cole and Gawain have a close encounter with Bela and her dragon, which gives Gawain much more respect for Kristen Cole than he had shown up to that point. Now we have a Team Black and Team Green collision. Rhaenyra's Hail Mary is set in motion. She makes her way to King's Landing to meet with Alicent Hightower in secret at the Sept. They meet where Alicent maintains that despite all the facts pointing in Rhaenyra's favor, that Viserys did indeed change his mind at the last second to Aegon. She mentions he was the prince that was promised, but Rhaenyra hears those words, catches this, and points out that it's a story that Viserys told about Aegon the Conqueror. Yes, Alicent, you named your son after another Aegon. There's other Aegons in the world besides your kid. At this point, Alicent realizes her error, but we are too far down the road, and the inevitable war has finally reached its breaking point. Dustin, you say you have a comp for this Alicent Rhaenyra scene. We like to try to make as many sports comparisons as we have here, but what did you think of when you had this scene at the end of this episode?
I was thinking of like a general college football theme for this, and like Alicent Hightower, or basically like Rhaenyra is kind of like college football fans, and Alicent Hightower is like USC and Oregon, Texas, Oklahoma. They're leaving to go ruin college football as it is with all these regional conferences and going off these other conferences. And us fans are like, don't do it. You don't have to do this. We can figure this out. And they're like, just like Alicent Hightower, it's too late. We're leaving. F you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. That is pretty spot on.
We're like, no. They're like, screw you.
You know where you're taking us. You're going to ruin everything. No, nope, too late. Too late. Yeah. Well, what'd you think of episode 3?
It's a really good episode. I saw a lot of stuff online of people like, this was the best episode. I didn't see that part of it. I thought episode 2 was way, way better with what they did. Lots of good stuff, though, in this episode. The buildup continues into allegedly episode 4 is a dance of dragons and stuff. So we do get our first kind of like huge battle, like you said.
Yeah.
We didn't get to see it because they're not going to spend tons of money on two small families fighting in the Riverlands.
We saw what we needed to see from it, which was.
And apparently, like, that's just been a feud for centuries. So, what does it matter? Maybe, maybe not. Depends kind of how it's taken by the higher ups on each side. But I like that the blacks are, and Rhaenys especially, is trying to save as much of this violence as she can. Yeah. Multiple times in this episode, she tells Rhaenyra to try to save this. And then she's even talking to Corlys like, you need to worry about descendants because I'm trying to save this, but I don't see it going well. Like,
yeah.
It's like she just feels the tension and what's about to come. I love how she was like trying to save this for so much of the episode though. And really cared about it.
But, and Rhaenyra was listening. That's important. Yes. Like she's listening and meanwhile, all of her advisors are like, go. Like we got to go to fight.
Our kids,
if you want to leave, we'll do this.
We got dragons. Let's just use them. And Rhaenys and Rhaenyra is listening. Like dragons are just going to cause other dragons get killed and kill our own people type deal. And we're trying to avoid that best we can. The other like cool, I think, just scene of this whole one was Harrenhal in general.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Like very wet, rainy, lots of effed up ceilings in that place.
It's like the perfect scary castle. Like,
yeah, it's really cool. There's just water dripping and puddles everywhere.
He's got his little buckets out to catch the drips in his room.
Yeah, and I like that Harrenhal is like both sides are like, we need Harrenhal. But I've also seen like Harrenhal's a strategic point, but it's also like so big that it's a burden.
Yeah.
So like, do you really want it? I don't know.
What's the value? What's the value right. of having that?
And that's kind of why like Lord Strong there has like 12 people in the whole place.
Yeah, it's literally in a room. He just walks in. I've
called. He walks in eating dinner, like, yeah. And they're like, he's like, okay, go have it. Yeah. I don't want it. You pay the taxes on this thing.
It's yours. It's yours, bro.
So that was kind of my favorite part. Obviously, the Allison Rhaenyra talk at the end was a throwback to season one. They did a similar thing, same views and whatnot. And so that was really cool scene. And Allison realizing she's a dum-dum when half the Targaryen kids are named Aegon. That needs to stop also.
Yeah.
But Rhaenyra tried. I got kind of, I don't know, goosebumps or something about when she was dressed as a Septa lady. Because
shame.
She looked really good in it, but it's shame. Like, I have bad memories of those people. I don't like it.
Shame.
But yeah, those are kind of my like general throw out thoughts.
Yeah, I'm with you. I loved the Harrenhal sequences. I love that they're leaning into like, because it's a cursed place.
Yeah. You
know? It's like, it's very cursed in this Westerosi realm. Like anybody who holds Harrenhal dies. And so I don't like where this is heading for Daemon, and don't like when somebody's like, oh, you're going to die here. Most likely he's probably going to die there. And I think from what I know, I think that's probably going to come to truth. But how long will he hold it? The vision was so creepy. I just love leaning into that aspect of Harrenhal and young Queen Rhaenyra, the Millie Alcock, mm-hmm. who played her in the first episodes of season one, made a little cameo, so that was cool. But then you see her stitching the head of Jaehaerys, you know, of his act that went wrong from the episode one. And so there's just kind of awful vision.
And yeah, you say vision. I don't know if it's a vision or he might have got drugged a little bit by the creepy lady at dinner.
Yeah, but who knows what's going on.
The biggest thing I heard on this is Daemon has been your dreams are BS from the Targaryen dreamer people. Like Helena's a super tight dreamer. But he's
Viserys's brother was a dreamer.
He's thought that's just BS type stuff. And now he's kind of getting that. So it's like, you see like a realization when he's at the Godswood tree, like happened to me? Okay. Why did I have that dream vision? And so like that, I think that's a critical turning point for him.
Yeah. I think he even says in season one, dreams didn't make us kings, dragons,
right.
You know, so that's his view on it. And so, yeah, to have him kind of having these visions there, these horrific visions. I'm really curious to see just kind of how long he stays at Harrenhal and what that's really going to continue to do to his overall health. But yeah, I mean, the main scene of this is that Queen Alicent and Queen Rhaenyra scene at the end. And, you know, it seems like Rhaenyra is about to get that confirmation, and she's just going to accept that maybe Viserys did, in fact, at the last minute change, despite everything, despite everything that he did, crawling up to the throne with like before he dies and everything still being steadfast in Rhaenyra is going to be queen, that she did, because you know Allison's like, would I lie? And then she lets it slip. He was said he's the prince that was promised, and Rhaenyra being like, what
story?
Did he say? That's about Aegon the Conqueror, not your fucking bitch of a son Aegon. And she's like, what the Conqueror? So it's fun to see Allison like that, but then it also sucks just because, you know, like, there's no turning back. You know, there's no turning back from this point. Like, what's she going to do? Go tell Aegon, hey, you can't be king anymore. Sorry.
Like, that's, yeah, I was thinking about that. Like, I get the whole sentiment of trying to reconcile this and, like, hey, there doesn't need to be bloodshed. Just Rhaenyra's like, but give me the throne. Well, that's, we're
not going
to, like,
happen.
I get it from Allison's point. Like, we're too far past that. I can't just go take my son off and, like, you're going to kill him anyway. Like,
hey, sorry.
how do you want me to do that? I get the general picture of it, but the actual steps of it don't make sense.
Yeah, I agree. I like at the end all be all, what's she going to do? She's just going to know that she made a mistake.
Yeah.
Now she's going to know that everybody dies because she made this mistake. So maybe it is a win in a way, because maybe Allison will wear all of that and,
yep,
you know, how that'll affect her. But anyway, so any other parts from the episode that you really liked or wanted to discuss?
Not right now. They might get brought up in a minute.
Yeah, let's move on to our winners and losers from this episode. You know, I'm finding it harder and harder, I feel like, with each episode to pick winners, as you know, things aren't going great for either side really here. But no. Any winners you got from episode 3?
I got two each on this one, so I'm going to start with one of them. One, I guess two big winners. Whispers are big winners. We got two whispers assigned to each council. The Master of Whispers, Larys Strong, for the Greens. He's been trying to get that for a while.
And Aegon, like, finally, somebody sees me for my worth.
Kind of just realized, hey, you're good at this. You know stuff. How about you be my Master of Whispers? And then Missaria for Team Black proved herself by getting Queen saved, seeing the other Eric coming up, and used to kind of do the same thing without a title before. So she's got a lot of connections in King's Landing. So getting assigned as Mistress, Lady of Whispers. I don't know what you call her, but she also has elevated herself in the world pretty quick.
Yeah, I had Lady Missaria as a winner in this episode. I had her as one in the last week's episode. Again, I think, like, she's proven her worth to Team Black here, saving the Queen last episode. But then, you know, helping her see Queen Allison, she's proven her worth and how she can use her strengths to help Queen Rhaenyra in this fight to come. And so she's shown a lot here. These last two episodes. Mm-hmm. I was going to think about putting Larys in there, but I don't really like the guy, so I didn't want to.
I don't like him, but hey, he got a good title on a seat of council.
But yeah, he's finally been seen for what his actions, what he can do. And he's making good with King Aegon. And so that's a place that you obviously want to be, is in good sights with the king. Did you mention your other winner? Or
no. Daemon's technically a winner. He did win Harrenhal.
Okay. He did, technically. Yeah.
Now, he just walked in the place and they gave it to him, but he won.
But at what cost?
He did have some sweet armor, though, with the dragon helmet and whatnot. Like, so maybe they just saw his sweet helmet and they're like, all right, you can have it.
I'm going to go with set designing because Harrenhal was dope.
Harrenhal was really dope.
A really awesome setup, like with the rain and, you know, those first scenes where he's just kind of walking through the castle with the swords and you're hearing like these noises and you got the rain coming in and the dark and eerie and scary castle. You know, I watched those, the house that dragons built, where they talk about the scene, that all that was just pretty incredible. And then, you know, so far, you know, all the places that we've been, these sets are really incredible. So I'll get that. My last winner, I think that's it. I think that's it for me. I don't know if I want to, I don't know if I want to give any more victories here. Do you have any more?
No.
All right, let's go to the loser side of this, Dustin. I've got like a 1A, and then
go ahead and take your 1A. I'm okay with whatever I got.
I got Allison as the loser. Obviously, she's obviously the big loser because it's her fault. You know, she thought her dying husband on Milk of the Poppy, who's drugged up, who can barely do anything.
His mouth has holes in it.
His mouth has holes in his face, is half his face is missing. Said all of a sudden changed his mind right before he died. You know, couldn't make sense of, didn't know who he was talking to or anything. You just took that and you put your son on the throne. and started this whole thing by mistake. And so, you know, she's racking up the L's so far this season. I think I've had her as a loser in every single episode. I think obviously the biggest loser here, realizing that Aegon the Conqueror, not Aegon your piece of shit son.
Yep, I had her on the list as well when she says, yeah, Aegon, prince I was promised. You know, Aegon, my son is a prince. Allison's like, the story, you dumb bitch? That's not about him. God, you're an idiot. As she realized that. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, shit.
I had her as well. My other loser is probably my favorite one, honestly, is Aemon getting super embarrassed in the brothel by his brother and King Aegon, and full frontal nudity showing us everything in that moment, but getting made fun of for coddling his favorite woman there. I don't know what to call her to be nice, but that was super embarrassing as drunk King Aegon embarrassed the shit out of him in the brothel and revealed a lot of other people's private parts to us that we didn't need to see.
Yeah.
What the hell?
We saw a blowjob.
Blowjob.
I was like, what the fuck?
That was, whoa.
Yeah. Pretty graphic scene that was. I had Aegon as another kind of loser in this. I guess they tie along with that. He was a gigantic asshole this episode. And that whole scene, just, you know, staffing the Kingsguard with his drinking buddies, probably not a good idea.
No.
And then, they all go to the pleasure house to, you know, soil. I guess the white cloak really doesn't mean anything anyway when Sir Criston Cole's doing what he's doing. You got all these guys. But he was an asshole to Aemon as well. And so, you know, I thought, you know, he is a piece of shit and there's not really a whole lot of redeeming stuff about him. But in the first two episodes, I thought, you know, we've really seen him maybe growing, and then he reverts right back to being a party boy. And so I give him a loss there. Team Green or Team Black, who wins this week's episode?
This is another tough one, but I think Team Green kind of wins this one.
Okay. I have Team Black as the winner because, like you said, Dustin, they got Harrenhal.
But I don't know how much Harrenhal really matters when it's too big to matter. And the Riverlands we see are already divided between themselves. I don't think taking Harrenhal unites the Riverlands type deal, like some people think. But
to be determined on what that means.
I just think Team Black's on the defensive a lot this episode, and none of it works, even though they get Harrenhal. But I think Team Green's already in the offensive mindset going into episode four. So I think they are edging out Team Black at the moment.
Yeah, I went Team Black, not really just because of the Harrenhal acquisition, but, you know, Bayla spots. So Criston Cole has this whole plan to go undetected to get Harrenhal and get these, but Bayla spots
that scene was dope.
And that scene was really cool. and so now Team Black knows where they are going. So his another plan by Sir Criston Cole has failed yet again. And so he's 0-2 on big schemes. And so I think, like, that's very good, knowing Rhaenyra getting, you know, her plan to go talk to Queen Alicent. While it's not going to change anything, she now knows what she has to do, and she's now going to go into war, and now she's going to go on to the attack here. And so, you know, dragons are coming. And so I think some of those moves might have helped Team Black a little bit more. If Bayla didn't spot Criston Cole, I think I would have given Team Green that lead here because they had that plan going. But I think that plan getting foiled kind of gives Team Black a little bit of an advantage here into what they need to do and where they need to go. And you've already got a dragon at Harrenhal. And so that's going to come into a big factor.
Yeah, I agree with you on all those points. The Bayla scene chasing Cole and G-Wayne. I'm going to call him G-Wayne because his name's spelled like that, like J. Rue Holiday. His name's G-Wayne.
G-Wayne.
G-Wayne looks like a douchebag.
I was like, immediately, I was like,
almost
man,
gets them all killed. We were all hoping for it just because Criston Cole was in the company.
Get him.
But he actually saved the day there for that group.
I know.
And we're staying under the trees and not staying at any inns, you idiots. But
yeah, I was curious about how G Wayne and Chris and Cole's relationship would be. Like,
not
great. I was like, oh, is this a possible? This isn't going to go well, right? Oh. He's going to figure out he's sleeping with his sister. But then I think that does maybe change how their relationship will be, because, like I mentioned in my recap, he all of a sudden has this newfound respect for Chris and Cole because he saved their lives.
Right.
So will that change their relationship a little bit? Because at first I thought they were going to kind of be guys butting heads at each other. Maybe they still will be.
But
I think now he might listen to Chris and Cole a little bit.
It was
more
cool when
now.
Bela went back to Rhaenyra and was like, hey, I saw Chris and Cole and these six dudes in the Riverlands going to Harrenhal. She's like, how'd you see that from so high up? Because she told her to stay up high.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I wasn't that high up anymore.
Yeah, we're not high up.
It sure wasn't. You were ground zero.
We were right there. Yeah, she had the kill shot ready.
Oh,
she
man.
Had the kill shot. She should have just burned
Jakaris
the
one time.
Down. Just burned the forest down, man. But yeah, I thought it was a really good episode. Obviously, you know, the first three episodes here have been just kind of getting inching closer to battle. And it looks like episode four is kind of where things are going to start really going off the rails. So we'll be interested to talk about that. Our character comp for us this week, we're going to go with King Aegon Targaryen, not Aegon the Conqueror, Aegon the Magnanimous. And so... Dustin, I'm going to start with my Big 12 comp. I think this is a pretty fairly obvious comp, and that's Colorado.
That's Colorado. Okay, I like comp. This.
They obviously got a great PR team. Of course, you know, Otto Hightower isn't there anymore, but the PR team on the green side has been really good.
Yep.
You know, he's got Laris telling him, hey, people don't think you're strong. People think you're weak, blah, blah, blah. And so he's, like, trying to, you know, get this image that he's this fierce and scary, you know, this king that should be respected. And it's kind of like the same thing with Colorado, you know, CFB 25 coming out saying all these ratings are trying to make you think that Colorado is this tough, scary team that you got to be worried about. But in reality, they're just this 4-8 football team that sucked last year and really not all that scary. Cool. They have these shiny new things. He has this shiny new armor. But, you know, cool.
Because I want to go really fight, and everybody's like, that's cute.
Yeah, everybody's like, oh, I'm as fierce as them all. And his mom literally goes, oh. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, King Aegon is definitely Colorado right now with a good PR team. But in actuality, are you really all that scared of him? And he's really just a guy who wants to go get drunk in a brothel with his boys at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you've got to remember, he's still like a teenager.
Yeah, he's still young, and that's kind of what Colorado is. It's this younger program, of course, under Dion, and they're trying to figure things out. But yet they have all these media outlets telling you they're forced to be reckoned with, even though you know. So that's my Big 12 comp. Texas Tech, what are we thinking? Do we have a Texas Tech Aegon comp?
I don't know, man.
Young, new, maybe Zach Kittley.
Yeah, supposed to be this firepower and really is nothing and hiding behind the head coach that's kind of doing a good job.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't really think of anybody that might be Aegon for Texas Tech.
No, I can't think of anything right now.
Zach Kittley would probably just be my closest. Like, oh, he's this great offensive, the wizard of offense, and really just not scared of his offense at all.
Yeah.
Really,
you're like, oh, that's cute. It's
think
okay.
We can put 20 points? Can we put 20 points on the board this game? I don't know. He would probably be my best comp that I can think of right now, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I just thought of the Colorado one, and I thought, oh, that's all too. That's perfect. That's a perfect comp.
That's
for,
really
for
good
Aegon.
Way to end this out.
And that will do it for the end of episode 3 of season 2, The Burning Mill. We hope you enjoyed our discussion about the episode. If you agree with our winners and losers or who won the episode, if you don't agree, let us know. But we had a fun episode. Talking about Texas Tech and Adidas and episode 3 of House of the Dragon. And to catch everything we're doing here at Tailgate Talks throughout the rest of the summer, throughout the rest of House of the Dragon season 2, Make sure you are following us. Follow us on Apple. Follow us on Spotify. Give us those 5 stars. 5 stars for the tailgate, please. If you listen to us on Apple, you can always leave us a review there. Also, follow us on social media. We are on Twitter at @tailgate_talks. It's where we do most of our posting and interacting. And so if you ever want to shout us out, talk to us, discuss anything with us, that's the place to do it. But we also have Facebook, Instagram, and a YouTube channel. Once again, I want to thank you guys for hanging out with us this week. Hope you guys have a happy 4th of July. And as always, we will catch y'all at the next tailgate.